Hey friends, Andy Herman here. Before we get into today's show, I just wanted to take a quick moment to thank all of our sponsors all throughout the year, specifically Habish Habish Rotier, Luigi's Frozen Pizzas, ZBiotics, and Prize Picks. They've all done such an incredible job supporting us here at Packaday. If you have the moment, please make sure to support them as well. One of the best ways that you can support the channel is by supporting our sponsors. Again, a huge thank you to Habish Habish Rotier, ZBiotics, Prize Picks, and of course, Luigi's Frozen Pizzas. Thanks for your time. Now on to today's show.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Packaday Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Packaday Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. Thanks so much for finding us today. Always appreciate you guys being here. We have a ton to get into for a random Thursday in June. Post-minicamp, there is a lot to go over, so we're going to jump into it right away. Before we get there, quick shout-out to Chris Weish, a brand-new All-Pro Packaday Podcast YouTube member. Appreciate that a ton, Chris. And Lenny Shark, appreciate you signing up as well, Lenny. You guys are awesome. If you haven't checked out memberships yet, make sure to do so. Members-only Q&As every single week. That is worth it in and of itself. And of course, it's just a great way to support the channel. So again, check that out if you have not already. Of course, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Anything that you do to interact with the show really does help the algorithm quite a bit. So we always appreciate that as well. All right, as mentioned, we got a ton to get into. And it starts, of course, with the fact that Jaire Alexander is a Baltimore Raven. First of all, thank you, Jaire, and thank you for being friends with Lamar Jackson and wanting to go to a team that does not exist in the NFC North, like the Minnesota Vikings, Chicago Bears, or Detroit Lions, as many Packers are apt to do when their time is done in Green Bay. Thank you for not going to the San Francisco 49ers, the LA Rams, the Philadelphia Eagles, or just even any team in the NFC. The Packers will face Jaire and the Baltimore Ravens in week 17 of this year. So they will get to face each other at some point, assuming that Jaire is actually healthy in week 17. That is something that has obviously been a struggle for him, which is why we're in this entire conundrum in the first place. But a pretty great end spot for anyone that wants to continue to cheer on Jaire Alexander, get to cheer him on all but one game, if that is your desire to do so. And just a lot easier to kind of, you know, make that transition to an AFC team than it is, of course, if he's going to a division or NFC rival. So love that he's a Baltimore Raven of all places he could have ended up. Love the fact that he is in the AFC. And for Jaire, I think it's a good team fit, a good scheme fit. He gets to play with his college quarterback, not on the same side of the field, of course, unless we get a reverse Bill Melton and he starts playing offense. He will, of course, be with his former teammate, though, Lamar Jackson, who he played with at Louisville in Baltimore. Sounds like it's a huge reason that he decided to go there. That corner group is very interesting with Jaire Alexander and Nate Wiggins now in the same group. The size is small-ish, right, and thin, but very good coverage, very interesting tackling. I'll just put it that way to be nice. Wiggins actually held up well as a tackler in his first year. We'll see if that continues. Jaire, ever since the shoulder injury, has not been a good tackler. But they have Marlon Humphrey, Awuzie, and then, of course, their safeties, Hamilton, and their rookie Starks are very, very good at tackling. So that maybe can clean up some of the stuff or just make up for Jaire and Wiggins a little bit. But that's an interesting defensive backfield. Now, the interesting aspect of this, and of course from a Packers standpoint, is that Jaire Alexander got 17. No, he did not get 17 and a half million. He did not get 12 or 10 or 8 or even really 6 million. He got a 1 year, $4 million overall deal with $2 million additional in incentives. Up to $6 million on a 1 year deal. This is significantly less than the $17.5 million he was set to make in Green Bay. Now, Jaire's dad was on ESPN Milwaukee, and they asked him, would Jaire have taken this deal to stay in Green Bay? And he said, yes. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not true. I have no reason to believe him. I have no reason not to believe him. It's probably true. My gut says, I think it probably is true. Here's why. I've talked about it over the last couple of days. I've been kind of saying it for almost forever. I don't think the Packers had any real legitimate interest in bringing Jaire Alexander back. I think they were done. And we got to hear from Brian Gutekunst on Cheesehead TV. Shout out to Cheesehead TV. And if you haven't checked out that interview yet over on Packers Transplants, highly recommend doing so. Brian said in a real way, and something that I've been echoing for months now, is that it seemed like it was time for both sides to just do something new. For Jaire Alexander to get a fresh coat of paint with another team, in this case, the Baltimore Ravens, and just start fresh. He looked happy. He looked excited. Hopefully he can stay healthy and he can go out and have a great season. It just felt like Jaire needed something different. And from the Packers' standpoint, for 4 years, they tried to get him out on the field. They were paying him a bunch of money and he played half the games. It was very difficult for them. It was very difficult for Jaire. And it just felt like it was time. No, you know, harsh words towards the Packers. No harsh words towards Jaire. It just sometimes happens this way. We see it a lot of time in sports. And this was just one of those situations where I think it was best for both sides to go in different directions. And it does feel like Green Bay really felt this way. I think they early on in this situation, in the offseason, decided they were going to go in a different direction. I think they tried to trade him. They couldn't trade him. They tried to maybe do a renegotiation. I think it was probably an extreme lowball offer. Do you want to come back for a vet minimum with a little bit of incentives? And where Jaire's dad already said almost no guarantees and things like that. They were like, no. So they release him. He goes to Baltimore. But it's worth noting that there were some reports that he was offered a little bit more elsewhere to play somewhere else. Maybe, sure. Maybe it was $1 million. Maybe it was $2 million. Maybe he could have got $7 or $8 million on the open market. It was still significantly less, which of course, again, was going to make that trade opportunity extremely prohibitive unless he was willing to renegotiate his contract for a trade, which there was no reason for him to do so because he knew Green Bay was basically going to release him. And if Green Bay released him, he was going to get to go to the team of his choosing and negotiate the contract on his own. It made no sense to do it via trade in Green Bay. So I think Green Bay was well within their rights on how they handled this situation. Jaire as well. And he goes to Baltimore, Green Bay moves on, and clearly Nate Hobbs and picking him up was a huge piece of this. I think they've known since the start of the offseason, sincerely, I think they knew very early on that Jaire was not going to be back this year. I think there maybe could have been a bend along the way if Jaire was willing to play for a lot less or something like that. Maybe it could have happened. I think they didn't close the door entirely, but I think they knew. I think they knew that this was the likely outcome, that he was going to end up playing for another team. And I think Nate Hobbs was a huge part of that. So I think that's where we're at with the entire situation. As far as the Packers situation on this, I know that there's people out there that say, hey, Green Bay should have done this. If they could have got him at 1 year, $4 million with $2 million in incentives, what's the downside in doing that? I tend to agree with you. I would say that if they did have that at their disposal, if they could have been able to bring him back for a $4 million base salary with $2 million on playing time incentives, how I view Jaire, and you know, if Jaire was just healthy, right? We didn't have these injury issues. The $17.5 million contract is probably just fine. They probably keep him on that deal if there had not been these injury issues, even if he was playing at the level that he was playing at, but just playing, you know, 15, 16 games per year. The $17.5 million is a fine number to be at. And you know, basically what it comes down to is you're paying him about $1 million per game. But with Jaire, you know, you just don't know how much he's going to play. But on a $4 million base deal, it's basically that if he only plays four games, you kind of get your money's worth. If he plays a quarter of the season, you've paid for it. Because he doesn't get those playing time incentives if he only plays four games. You're only going to pay him the $4 million base. You paid him $1 million per game. You kind of got your ROI on it. And if he plays, you know, 10 games, and you pay him $6 million, he gets those incentives in that situation. Again, you're better off in that situation. You've got more than the ROI that you're looking for. And if he plays 17 plus games, now you're in great territory, only paying him $6 million for those 17 games. So I would have been slightly interested. I don't think at the end of the day, knowing on what we kind of know now, I don't think this was a money thing in totality. I think they knew they weren't going to pay him $17.5 million. I just think that they were ready to move on. And I think that they very much viewed this as it was just a part. It was time. It was time to go in a different direction. So I don't think this was money related when it comes down to it. When we see him get the deal that he got done, maybe I'm wrong. and maybe they did offer him something similar and Jair just said no and his dad's lying about it. I don't have any reason to believe that, but maybe that's the case. But my guess here is Green Bay really had no interest the entire time and pretty much knew the exit was going to come and that he was not going to be a Green Bay Packer. Jair's contract, very similar to Tre'Davious White, who signed a very similar deal last year when he had been banged up and had injury issues, but was still very talented, almost an identical type of contract. As far as like comparative contracts, Darius Slay, who's 34 years old, 1 year, $10 million. Jair didn't get close to that. Eric Stokes, only making about $1 million less in base salary than Jair Alexander. Keyshawn Nixon making more in salary this year than even if Jair hits the upside of his salary. So very interesting number for Jair and a very low salary. Just a reminder that, hey, playing time is very important. You better be out on the field or you're not going to get the deal that you were maybe hoping for. I do think he fits well in Baltimore. I think it's a good deal for the Ravens. I think it's a great deal for the Ravens, quite frankly, but he's going to have to stay healthy to some real extent in order to be able to pay that off. I think that's all I kind of have to say about that. Again, I think it was just time for both. And I think it was a good deal for Baltimore. Probably would have considered it if I were Green Bay, but understand why they did not go in that direction. A lot of people have asked, I'm not going to try to go too long into this, but a lot of people have asked about the Jair contract. And there's, you know, you see different things, and we've gone through this a little bit in the past, but the Packers saved $17.5 million by releasing Jair Alexander. But then you look at it, and he has $17 million in dead cap hit now on this on the salary cap this year. So there's some confusion there. So I want to try to clear that up as best you can, as best I can. Also, a lot of people are asking me, how much are they paying Jair Alexander this year? That's worth noting as well. So the first thing to note here is they are paying him nothing this year, okay? Signing bonus money. When you sign a player to a signing bonus, that money is paid all up front. You pay it immediately, which is why it's so important for Green Bay and teams to have cash on hand so they can give those huge signing bonuses. If you're going to give a quarterback a $100 million signing bonus, you need to have $100 million to give them. All right. So cash on hand, important. So when you sign that player to a big signing bonus, though, you give them that upfront. You've already paid for it. So the $17.5 million that they saved by releasing Jair Alexander was all base salary. He was set to make base salary and roster bonuses. He was set to make that additional $17.5 million this upcoming year if he was on the team. By releasing him, he had $17.5 million come off the books, which is important. They no longer owed that money to him. They got off of it in its entirety. They got off, the $19.5 million for next year's salary cap as well. All of that gets nuked. They don't owe a penny of it. But how the signing bonus works is when you sign a player to a signing bonus, in this case, not Jair, but we'll just use a simple example. If you sign a player to a four-year deal and give them a $20 million signing bonus, that $20 million gets paid up front. But from an accounting standpoint, it prorates over the course of the four-year contract. So $5 million, $5 million, $5 million, $5 million. $5 million each of the years is what it counts against the cap. So he plays that first year, that $5 million counted against the cap that first year, then the second year, then they want to cut a player the third year. They've got $10 million left in signing bonuses that they haven't accounted for yet. You release him, all $10 million of that goes towards your immediate salary cap, unless it's post June 1st, in which case $5 million will hit this year, and then $5 million will hit the remaining of next year's salary cap. So that's how that works. But it's worth noting that while it is an accounting function, you've already paid that money up front. So Green Bay does not owe Jair Alexander any additional money. But they did have $17.5 million in money that had yet to be accounted towards the salary cap. And Green Bay decided to accelerate that all into this year's. So they took the $17.5 dead cap hit that was remaining of signing bonus money that, again, was already paid for, but not accounted for yet, and accounted for it all on this year's salary cap. Meanwhile, you didn't have to pay him anything additional, and you do save the $17.5 million in base salary this year and the full $19.5 million in base salary plus roster bonuses and incentive bonuses and those things, or workout bonuses, I should say, in next year's cap as well. So you save a bunch of money, but you did accelerate that dead cap hit into this year's deal, but they're not paying him anything more because they already paid for it up front when they gave him a signing bonus, when he's restructured his deal, or when he's signed his initial contract in the first place. So that's just that. nothing more owed to him financially, still $17 million to account for on the books this year, which is what that dead cap hit is. Hopefully that clears up Jair's contract for you. We'll be right back. Some other quick ones. ESPN put out their all quarter century team. So for the past 25 years, only one Packer-ish on that list, Julius Peppers. Julius Peppers, the only Packer that made it on the all 25-year team, I guess all quarter century team. There were a couple others that were practice squad players, what we could call honorable mentions here. Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. It was Mahomes, Manning, and Brady at quarterback. All right. Rodgers, to me, should have been on there. Who you want to take off, that's probably a little bit tougher, but I think Rodgers should have been on there. It's not the worst thing in the world that he was like the fourth guy, but it is what it is. The big one, though, is Charles Woodson. Charles Woodson not being on that list is absolutely absurd. And they had him as an honorable mention or practice squad player at safety. First of all, put him at corner and put him on that damn list. Like, he is more than deserving. That is a unbelievable snub and absolutely should have been on there. So not that it matters, not that I really care. It's a meaningless list or whatever. But if you're putting together the best team over the past 25 years and you're not putting Charles Woodson on that list, it's not even worth making the list at that point in time. We did learn when joint practices are. The Colts and Packers will practice in Indianapolis on August 14th. And for those of you who want to go see the Seahawks and Packers practice together in Green Bay, August 21st will be that day. So that's going to be a big day at camp. If you want to get out there, make sure you get out there early. Tons of people will show up that day, and it'll be Seahawks and Packers practicing together again Thursday, August 21st. Another just interesting one, we've obviously been talking about the Packers corners here for a while and whether they are good enough. And a key piece of that is Keyshawn Nixon. And we've talked about, hey, he's moved to the outside and outside corner seems to be a better fit for him. I just wanted to take a second to quantify that for a moment, because I went back and I looked at my grades for Keyshawn Nixon. Now, week five last year was when we started seeing Keyshawn make that transition to outside corner a lot more and then play it primarily through the rest of the season. Keyshawn Nixon, in 2023 and in the first 4 weeks of 2024, was a negative 4.0 grade for me, a pretty significantly negatively graded corner on the team. From week five last year, again, when he moved over to outside corner, through the end of the season, primarily as an outside corner, he was a plus 1.55 grade. That is a massive difference. Going from a negative 4.0 to a plus 1.55, a 5.55 point difference is huge. So I do think that there is real reason to be optimistic that Keyshawn Nixon found his home, found his spot, and now is playing with confidence there, hopefully going into this year. He was night and day different. And if you just look at his profile, his height, weight, speed, agility, things like that, he profiles as an outside corner. His agility testing in college was terrible. Usually you need those fluid hips and that agility in the slot to be able to hang with some of those shiftier players. Nixon didn't really have that. He was able to hang at that spot. He does some good things, including hold up against the run, tackle well, has the speed, etc. But he didn't have that change of direction ability that you would really like to see in that slot corner role. Move him to outside. He has everything. The straight line speed is super important. Put him in a outside zone corner role, he's made for it. I think his ball skills probably still need to get a little bit better, something he can continue to work on. But outside of that, it fits him so much better than the slot. And we saw that really grayed out that way this past year. And then last but not least, before we get to Isaiah Simmons, it is officially peak off season. We are now about a week since mini camp ended. It was last Thursday. It feels crazy that we're already a week into this true off season period where there's nothing going on. In that week, the narratives that have been going around are that the Packers could be moving out of Green Bay. Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst are on the hot seat. Goody doesn't want to win a Super Bowl. The Packers are incompetent for letting Jair Alexander walk, and Ed Policy is in over his head. Those are just a few of the hyperbolic, you know, talking points that have been out there over the past week. We have officially reached peak offseason mode. And can we all... Oh, also, because there was a report that the Packers want to re-sign Rashid Walker as well. That was from Ricky, by the way. So if you're not familiar with Ricky, just know that these reports are not exactly Ian Rappaport or Adam Schefter-esque. These are, you know, back of the internet sort of reports. Ricky gets some stuff right, but it's not exactly shooting 100%. So who knows what to make of the Rashid Walker thing? Probably nothing as of yet. But because of that, Jordan Morgan is also a bust, and Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton were stupid draft picks. So it is, again, peak offseason mode. Let's just take a breath. All right. The cornerback room is going to be fine for now. We'll see what it looks like. We'll see if they make any changes. Let's see what some of these, you know, back end Kamal Haddon, Micah Robinson type corners will look like going into the regular season after they have a full training camp and preseason, et cetera. See what Nate Hobbs looks like, and if Nixon can continue to play well on the outside. Zach Jacobson posted a fun little stat comparing, you know, Carrington Valentine to Jalen Ramsey over the past couple of years, and statistically they're very similar. Like, just take all a deep breath. Packers are not moving out of Green Bay at the moment. Yes, Brian Gutekunst is trying his best and doing everything he can to win a Super Bowl. Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst are not on the hot seat. The picks of Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton, let's give them, I don't know, maybe Anthony Belton more than a couple weeks to try to prove that he's worth that second round pick. And Jordan Morgan, I thought, looked really good in OTAs and minicamps. There's not much you can glean from offensive line play, but I just thought he looked like he put on some functional strength, was moving around really well, looked healthy. I'm excited to see him at camp. Ed Policy was just towing the company line when it comes to keeping the Packers in Green Bay, something that Mark Murphy has echoed on numerous occasions during his time as president and CEO. I posted an article over it on social media as well, if you want to go check that out. And then just a lot of stuff going on there, but it's all going to be okay, Packers fans. I'm not saying that the Packers are infallible or that they can't make mistakes or that Goody couldn't try to maybe do some things different, but deep breaths. We got a lot of offseason left. Just try to get to training camp without breaking down too much. We don't need to have any existential crises here from a Packers standpoint. Everything's trending in a good direction. This is a very fun, young, talented team. Let's keep the eye on the prize. Stay focused. Let's move forward. Let's not get into the weeds too deep here. And I love the weeds sometimes. You guys know that. I love getting into every little conversation with the Packers. That's why we do it 365. But deep breaths, everyone. All right, let's get to our main topic. And yes, I know some of these off-season topics, by the way, where we've got a lot going on, or there might be a couple different things we want to get to. For those of you who are not familiar with the format by now, it's going to be a little news blip, 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 and then our main event, our main topic at the end. So that's the general consensus. Some of these I know yesterday and today, the forefront stuff goes a little bit long. Sometimes it's just going to happen. It's okay. It's all great Packers stuff to talk about, but we will get into our main topic here, which is Isaiah Simmons. And as we go over Isaiah Simmons, some of you might be thinking, Andy, I'm pretty sure I recall you doing a deep dive scouting report on Isaiah Simmons already. And you did it on Nate Hobbs and Mecole Hardman, and you did it on Aaron Banks and the free agents already. So why are we doubling up here? Two different things. All right. Two different hats that need to be worn. The first one that we did for all the free agents already is the deep dive scouting report. All right. So that's height, weight, speed. What were they like coming out of college? What have they accomplished in their career? What are their attributes? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? Those are all sort of things that I look at in the deep dive scouting report. That is their scouting report of what they can become as Green Bay Packers, what the expectation should be, going through and watching the film, but looking at it from a scout's point of view. Okay. That's number one. Today, and what we're going to be doing with these free agents over the course of the next week or so, I was able to do today Isaiah Simmons. I finished up watching the tape on Mecole Hardman and grading the tape on Mecole Hardman. Of course, those are the easy ones because I didn't play very many snaps, hoping to get to Hobbs very soon here as well. And then we'll get to Aaron Banks as soon as we possibly can after that. But what we're doing here now is what I did is went through and graded every snap. So I'm not looking at it from a scout's point of view. What can they become? I'm looking at it as from like a coaching point of view of like, what were they? What did they do this past year? So I went through for Isaiah Simmons today, too many Isaiahs, Isaiah Simmons today, and graded every single play that he had this past season. Now, thankfully for me, it was only 181 plays that I had to go through, but I went through and I watched every single one of those 181 snaps and graded every single one of them. That was from 2024 alone. His grade was a negative 0.35. What we're talking about here is a neutral level player, okay? It's a pretty small sample size in general. anything in that like negative 0.5 to plus 0.5 is right in that neutral range. You could even argue negative 1 to plus 1, pretty close to that neutral range. This is a pretty neutral level player, ended up grading slightly in the negative. To give you an idea of where the linebackers were this past year, Edgerrin Cooper was a plus 4.75. Isaiah McDuffie was a plus 1.00. Tyron Hopper in very minimal snaps was plus 0.05. Eric Wilson was minus 0.05. Simmons would have been negative 0.35 based on his tape in New York. And then Quay Walker was negative 2.2. Although I will note that stretch towards the middle of the season before he got hurt and then came back was some really good football that graded well into the positive. So there were some signs there for Quay, but he ended with a negative 2.2, but on much greater snaps than what Isaiah Simmons played this past year. As you're looking at this with Simmons, you're looking at trying to replace Eric Wilson. Now, Eric Wilson was a core special teamer. Isaiah Simmons will be, assuming he makes the team, a core special teamer. I should note here, my snaps and grades were just defense, not special teams, just defense. Wilson on defense this past year played 559 snaps at a 64.3 grade per PFF, and again, a negative 0.05 grade for me. Isaiah Simmons in 181 snaps at a 45.6 grade per PFF, a negative 0.35 grade for me. So PFF liked Wilson a little bit more than they liked Isaiah Simmons. I had pretty similar grades, Simmons a little bit worse. Also noteworthy, again, Simmons played fewer snaps. So if you extrapolate his grade over, you know, three times as many snaps, which is what Wilson played, you know, you're going to get a worse grade for Simmons. But what I will still say is I think you're looking at a pretty similar player that has the special teams value that can come in and give you some play at linebacker. And it's basically going to be like replacement level play. Not going to be anything through the roof. It's not going to be anything catastrophic. He's going to come in, do some solid things. Nothing super sexy. Nothing, like I said, that's going to really hurt you, but just replacement level play, which is a number five linebacker is kind of what you're looking for, especially when they do have a little bit of upside, which we'll talk about, and they can give you some really core special team snaps as well. So that's what we're looking at here, is a potential replacement with for Eric Wilson, who left the team, of course, in the offseason. So as I went through and graded every play, I wrote down some things that were observations, things that I learned about Isaiah Simmons this past year. We're just going to go through them. I got 12 takeaways as I went through and watched every snap. We'll be right back. The first one is that his defense was actually better than I expected. When I went through and watched some core plays and some key plays over the last 3-4 years from Simmons, I really liked some of the stuff he did on teams, but some of the defensive stuff was tough to watch at times. So I was actually pretty excited when I went through and watched these 181 snaps, and it wasn't like this really big negative grade. In fact, I thought, like I said, there was some really good stuff that he did, and I think there's going to be some ways that Jeff Hafley is going to be able to utilize him, but the grade and just the tape in and of itself as a defender was better than I was expecting. What I will say is you're not going to want to ask him to do a ton on early downs as a run defender. If you utilize Isaiah Simmons on defense, you probably want him in on passing downs only. He can cover in zone. There are some man-to-man assignments that he can handle. He can spy the quarterback and he can blitz. More on that in just a moment. But those are the things you want to ask him to do. Holding up against the run, against bigger, more physical teams especially, is not his forte. So put him in, again, on more obvious passing downs or third and longs in those sort of situations. You can play him on those. And I think there is a role potentially for him moving forward. But be very cognizant and cautious of playing him a ton on early downs, especially, again, if you're going against a more physical team. He just does not hold up well against those bigger offensive linemen very often. And him trying to take on blocks in the run game is usually not a pretty situation, and it usually does not end very well. I'll also say that I was hoping to see a little bit more of him as a blitzer. Not that he didn't do it, just that he didn't get home very often. Now, I think he can work on disguising a little bit better. And I think more importantly, you know, the old adage is backers on backs equals sacks. I think he's got to be a little bit more physical when he gets matched up with a running back and trying to run through them rather than maybe trying to get around him or those sort of things. So I still think from a speed standpoint and an athleticism standpoint, blitz him and utilize him in that way. but he does have to get a little bit more efficient and work on getting off some of those blocks of the running backs so he can go and make those impact plays. I did think he was more than capable as a quarterback spy. There were multiple plays. He did overrun a couple, but you can tell he's got great feet, great, just again, athleticism. He's got the height for it. He gets those arms up in the passing lanes while he's kind of in that zone waiting for the quarterback and seeing what they're going to do. And he mirrors very well. There was one play, I think it might've been Russell Wilson, where he mirrored the quarterback, spied him, and then Wilson went to throw and he got up and was able to bat the ball away as well. So he can spy very well. And it's something I even think he can get better at, but that's certainly something that you can ask him to do. Here's the next thing. This is a really, really fun one. Jeff Hafley, if he wants, can find some very fun things to do with Isaiah Simmons. There were two plays where Isaiah Simmons lined up at linebacker. It looks pre-snap like you've got two high safeties and your two corners on the outside. I think it was probably two linebackers, a slot corner, four pass rushers, etc. And he's just lined up in a pretty ho-hum linebacker spot. And that's what your read is pre-snap. It's a very, very simple nickel defense. And then post-snap, quarterback takes the ball. The two safeties come up. Isaiah Simmons from his linebacker spot screams back to be the only post safety on the field and plays post safety on the play. I mean, imagine Jeff Hafley with something like that out there. And he looked good doing it. Like there was one play where he got back there and read the play well, got to the sideline, read the quarterback's eyes, and would have been able to, you know, kind of meet the ball where it needed to be. If the ball was thrown, he would have been able to cut that off. So to me, having a player like that, that you can put at linebacker to begin with, and that can scream back the single high safety from being a true linebacker is remarkable. It's one thing, right? If you've got like Javon Bullard or Xavier McKinney or something playing a box safety role and you're accounting them as a safety, it's another one entirely. When you see Isaiah Simmons out there, a true linebacker, never in a million years, imagine going, like you see the pre-snap read if you're a quarterback, right? You see two safeties and let's just imagine, you know, Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney are out there and Isaiah Simmons and Edgerrin Cooper are at linebacker together. And then you've got your nickel corner, your two outside corners and your four pass rushers. And you take the snap, you're expecting to see, you know, maybe one of those safeties drops down, and you get a single high look or something like that. You drop back to pass, you go play action. You turn your back to the defense. You fake that handoff. You get turned back around and you look out there. And the two safeties who were back there are now up in the box. And you're thinking, all right, well, who's playing safety? You look, and there's a linebacker out there playing single high safety, but he's got the ability to range sideline to sideline because he's just a freak. Just some really, really fun stuff. And Jeff Hafley will love that. I don't know how much Simmons is going to have to make the team first. And then if he does, and I think he will, you know, he's got to get out on the field. But there are some very unique ways to utilize this player. And like I said, give Jeff Hafley toys. And more often than not, that's going to be a very good thing. Isaiah Simmons is a fun toy to play with. And if there's anyone that knows how to tinker with it the right way and figure out the right way to utilize it, it's Jeff Hafley. And I'm excited to see what he can come up with if Isaiah Simmons gets some reps on defense. I do think he's a very good scheme fit for Jeff Hafley. Some of the stuff that we just talked about, but being more of a zone defender and being a QB spy, a blitzer, he can do those things. And I think, again, that's going to fit very well with what Jeff Hafley wants to utilize him for. He works well with those double A gap blitzes because, again, he can show double A gap blitz and then get back really, really quick using his incredible athleticism to get to unique spots on the field in coverage where usually you want to be back a little bit further playing that coverage spot. But because he's got that unbelievable athleticism, you can double A gap mug look where it looks like he's going to come after the quarterback. You might can't even fake with him so that the center has to account for him and then scream back to whatever spot you need to get to on the field. So he does that very well also. There are times he plays too fast. A couple of those quarterback spy situations that we talked about where he runs up to go and make the play and then he just overruns it, runs right by it. So he's got to play a little bit more under control. He does rally to the football though. There's a couple plays on tape where he gets upfield and then has to completely change directions and get all the way back there and still is in there making the final or helping to make the final tackle on a play. So it's great to see him just kind of sprint around the field and rally and not give up on plays. I did think he lacked playmaking just as I was watching him. I'm like, I don't think he made any plays. Went back and checked the box score. Zero sacks, zero interceptions, and only one pass breakup. Now, again, only 181 snaps, not a ton of opportunity, but failed to make those big plays. It was really just a one pass breakup this past year. From time to time, you can see him run with some wide receivers. Even on some crossing routes, it was pretty impressive to see him get matched up with a receiver and be able to run the length of the field with him. Again, just that great athleticism showing out. And last but not least, it did feel like when watching him, there's something there. I'm hesitant. I wouldn't get your hopes up too much. I don't think we're talking about another Devondre Campbell situation in his first year where you get this guy cheap and it becomes a first team All-Pro or a Zach Bond situation from this past year. But I do think that this is a pretty solid pickup from Green Bay. And I do think that there's something there. And if anyone, again, can unlock it, I think it might just be Jeff Hafley. I'm excited to see what he can do in this defense and how Hafley decides to utilize him if he makes the team and if he does get out there on defense. But it's a great fit. I'm excited about it. Liked what I saw on tape. Slight negative grade. I'm hoping that can even be better under Jeff Hafley in 2025. So what, again, I learned from Isaiah Simmons, the defense was better than I expected. Don't ask him to do a ton as a run defender. Was hoping for a little bit more as a blitzer. He's more than capable as a quarterback spy. Jeff Hafley's going to love him, and some of the stuff he did screaming back to safety was pretty cool and fun. He's a great scheme fit. Double A-gap blitzes are very effective because he can, again, drop or come as a blitzer. Sometimes plays a little bit too fast, rallies to the football, lacked playmaking ability, can run with receivers, and there is still something there to his game. I'm excited to see him as a member of the Green Bay Packers. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow, probably with another one of these, either Mecole Hardman or Nate Hobbs. I'll keep you posted on that, obviously, as we get to tomorrow's show. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jay Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, Pack Attack Cast, and Chris Weish. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.